Hey y'all, Scott here. Like I told you before, the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org represents the best of the libertarian movement. Led by the fearless Jacob Hornberger, FFF writers James Bovard, Sheldon Richmond, Wendy McElroy, Anthony Gregory, and many more write the op-eds and the books, host the events, and give the speeches that are changing our world for the better. Help support the Future Freedom Foundation. Subscribe to their magazine, The Future of Freedom. Or to contribute, just look for the big red donate button at the top of FFF.org. Peace and freedom. Thank you. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and our guest today is the great Andy Worthington. His website is andyworthington.co.uk. And, of course, he writes at the Future Freedom Foundation site, FFF.org. And he's the author of the book, The Guantanamo Files, Profiles of Everybody Who Was Ever Held at Guantanamo, as far as we know. And also the producer, director, the man behind the documentary Outside the Law. Welcome back to the show, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Scott?
Welcome back to the show. I can hear you fine. Thank goodness. Got an mixing board here. I was crossing my fingers and hoping it was going to work out. Okay, so listen, man. This article that you wrote at FFF.org is such a bummer. Jesus, this thing... I don't know why, well, maybe people are starting to care about this again, Andy, but it's the prisoners speak. Reports from the hunger strike in Guantanamo, and maybe that is part of the story here, right, is that it's taken this in order to get people's attention again about the injustice down there at Guantanamo. But what is this? Explain this hunger strike.
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, the first thing I'd want to say, Scott, really, is that it's important. It's getting the voices of the prisoners out to the people that started to make a difference, I think. You know, it's backed up by the facts and figures that we'll discuss. But for too long, you know, first of all, the Bush administration and now the Obama administration has got away with hiding these people away from public outrage because they're, you know, they're so hidden from public view and their voices are not heard. So the fact that during this hunger strike, people's voices have actually started to be heard. And, you know, one guy managed to get an op-ed in the New York Times. And Shaka Armour, the last British prisoner, got his story in the Observer newspaper here in the UK. And Jason's work, which I drew on for this article, Jason Leopold of Truthout, this is hugely important. It's enabling people to see that, hey, these are real people. They're not just the bad guys, we were told. They're not just faceless numbers. They're real people. So, you know, the hunger strike, well, it's nearly 3 months now, Scott, and we, you know, we know that it started because, in particular, because a new guard force, and presumably the commander of that guard force at Guantanamo, started behaving very aggressively towards the prisoners with aggressive cell searches and the abuse of their copies of the Quran, which is, throughout Guantanamo's history, has been a way of enraging the prisoners and getting them to go on hunger strikes. I don't know whether that was the intention. But, you know, underlying it, and of course what has since surfaced and really become the dominant theme of this, is that these are men who are absolutely in despair because there appears to be no way that any of them are leaving Guantanamo alive under any circumstances. Really, seriously, it's that bad. None of them. Now, you know, that would be bad enough under any circumstance, I think that the United States, under President Obama, who promised to close the prison and failed to do so, is holding men indefinitely for the rest of their lives without charge or trial, and that there's no way that they can get out of Guantanamo under any circumstances except in a coffin. I think that would be appalling, however you look at it. There's one category of these prisoners, which where I think the story has an added layer of injustice. And I think that this is the one that people have been picking up on. And I have to say that myself and human rights groups and lawyers groups have been pushing this since the 10th anniversary, 16 months ago. 86 of the 166 men still held at Guantanamo were cleared for release from the prison by a sober and responsible interagency task force that President Obama established when he came into office in January 2009 and when he promised to close the prison. 86 of them. The United States government, in its own words, its own careful words, has approved them for transfer. But the bottom line is, these are people that the president's own task force said it is not in the interest of the United States to carry on holding these men indefinitely. And what's happened? these men are being held indefinitely. That's the, you know, that's up front the real horror of what's going on. And, you know, and it's not really any less unjust for the other 80 men, but nobody has come round to their cell or given them a piece of paper saying, hey, we don't want to hold you anymore, but actually carried on holding them.
Right. All right, now, so what exactly does a hunger strike look like, or what do you know? What information has come out? I guess the lawyers are the conduit. As you said, two actual prisoners have been allowed to write essays, and then their lawyers have been talking to. What have we found out about the situation there?
Well, you know, what I think has come out is that the majority of the prisoners were being held in Camp 6, which is a camp where there are communal facilities, and they had been allowed to mingle, you know, relatively freely over recent years. And as they became mobilized, you know, they actually were able to, I think, basically, you know, start trying to run the show, in the sense that they were obstructing the guards, they were hiding the surveillance cameras, all this kind of stuff, which, you know, in a prison environment where the people responsible for the prison have a very limited view of the world. It requires them to be in charge. That's basically it. Then it's setting themselves up for confrontation with the authorities, which is exactly what happened. And, of course, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, the authorities responded by storming in an early morning raid. There was violence. People were shot with non-lethal rounds, I believe. And, you know, and they've put everybody, from what I understand, back into solitary confinement or into solitary confinement, you know, which I think is a cruel, cruel thing to be doing when the reason they were agitating in the first place is because they're, you know, they're so sick of being locked up in a living tomb. So it's really not an answer, you know. Within the ways that prison operates, it's an issue of them retaining control. I understand that, but they're not making the rules. They may be, you know, dealing with the day-to-day rules of how the prison operates, but the bigger picture of the prison is that this is owned by President Obama, the President of the United States, and, you know, in its administration is also partly in the hands of the United States Congress, where lawmakers have done everything in their power to keep the prison open, and President Obama has done precious little to push for the prison to be closed as he promised. They're the people who are responsible for the bigger picture of why the hell this place is still open. You know, and it's disgusting to be standing back and watching these men who are fighting for their rights in a way that all of us would understand. If we could possibly imagine being deprived of our liberty for 11 years without anybody necessarily even telling us why, and certainly not feeling that they had any reason to justify it, I think if we could, you know, we can sympathize with them and see that this is a huge political problem that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, on the question of the Congress and the president, I kind of like my own theory of responsibility is that the percentages don't have to add up since it's a qualitative thing and not really quantitative. So I think it's fair to say that the Congress and the president are all 100% responsible for this. Because as bad as the Congress is in trying to do evil and accomplishing evil, it's still all the president's responsibility. He doesn't have that as a cop-out at all, because this is the same guy who likes to just, you know, kind of wax on at press conferences about, well, geez, you know, if this or that happens in somebody else's civil war on the other side of the planet, my calculus will change about whether I want to invade that country or not. He can do that. He can just, you know, on a whim, just sort of shrug his shoulder and say, well, you know, I'll decide who we invade and who we don't invade and based on my own criteria and blah, blah, blah. Oh, no, but I'm just powerless before Harry Reid when it comes to closing down the communist military tribunal system and a trialless prison down there in communist Cuba, you know, where it's actually probably worse than on the other side of the wall where Castro's in charge. In that case, all of a sudden, I'm merely the chief executive of the departments created by Congress and subject only to their will.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's very important. I mean, you know, it is important that we don't underestimate the cynical extent of the obstacles raised by Congress, because, you know, they are They're jaw-droppingly awful. I mean, they have told the president twice in the National Defense Authorization Act, so passed at the end of 2011, at the end of 2012, that they will not allow a prisoner to be released from Guantanamo unless the Secretary of Defense is prepared to certify that that particular individual, any of these individuals, will not be able to engage in any kind of anti-American activities, by which they mean returning to the battlefield, recidivism, militancy, terrorism. Who knows? They might just mean, having a bad word to say about what happened to them. But no, I think fundamentally they're saying we want a cast iron guarantee that these people won't be able to try and do us harm. Well, that's not possible.
Right.
So, that is a very high bar that's been set, an impossibly high bar that's been set. But as you point out, who's the president of the United States? Is it the Congress? No, it's not. It's the president of the United States. And in the National Defense Authorization Act is a waiver that allows the president and the defense secretary, if they regard it as being in the interest of American national security, to bypass Congress, if Congress insists on being so cynical and obstructive about things, but they determine that it's important that prisoners are released, they can bypass all of that. And they haven't done it. So, President Obama, after his lovely words that he uttered yesterday, where he absolutely said what was wrong with Guantanamo, but didn't demonstrate that he actually was going to address it, the solution is either that he goes to Congress and says, you guys have got to get in line. If he's not prepared to do that, he can leave them. He doesn't have to deal with them. He can do it himself. Mm-hmm. He and the Defense Secretary, Chuck Hagel, can begin to approve the release of prisoners from Guantanamo and get them out of there. Which one is it going to be?
Even without defying Congress, you're saying.
Congress, but what I'm not prepared to let him do, and increasingly more and more of us aren't prepared, is to let him just waffle on a bit and sound great and then do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right, you're saying even without defying Congress in any way, he's already got all kinds of process for beginning to do the right thing anyway, if not closing the
whole
thing.
He has this waiver in the legislation. It's very important. He's not used it.
Right.
He's not used it because we know that he doesn't like rocking the boat politically, to be honest.
The counterfactual is
Republicans and Harry Reid and members of his own party if he does anything. And he's not prepared to do that. The guy's too busy not having anyone rock his boat to want to be involved in something that will cause him difficulty, do I care about that? No. I mean, these guys are rotting in a completely unacceptable basis at Guantanamo, and every day I expect to switch on my computer and find out that one of these poor souls has died because President Obama can't be bothered to take on Congress.
Yeah.
It's not good enough. It's time for him to, he said this stuff yesterday, Scott. He said, I'm going to have to go to the Congress. I'm going to have to step up on this. Do it. Be as good as your words are. But don't, expect that we're going to be fobbed off by you saying, I'm going to go and talk to Congress again. Didn't I just say all the right things? Thanks very much.
Right. Yeah, it's sort of like Israel and Palestine. It's a mystery why he even pretends like he's going to do anything about it. We already know the last time that Democratic senators complained to the newspapers that, man, we got started on the whole close Guantanamo thing back in 2009, and we were working hard, and we were going to get it done, and then we realized the president wasn't going to lift a finger to help us at all, to pressure anyone who wasn't already on board to join, to try to strike any kind of deal with the Republicans whatsoever, to do anything to lead on the issue at all. And once we realized that we had mistakenly stuck our necks out on an issue that we were now destined to lose, we all backed down. Because what are you going to do, push a losing issue? And so he's the one who made the big deal about it in the first place. And, of course, here's the other thing, too. The politics as, excuse. He's got a midterm coming up. There's always a midterm coming up and whatever. But that's no excuse anyway, because if he wanted to lead, he could kick the Republicans' ass on this. Look, the Guantanamo Bay prison, like you said yesterday, he said it again yesterday. It's wrong. It's creating enemies for us. It has created enemies for us. It's what Castro might do. It's the wrong thing. Why are Republicans just like commie Castro? I mean, he could beat them in a couple of sentences. on this issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that whole, well, geez, someone might call me a wimp if I do the right thing excuse, just, it doesn't hang. And by the way, he can count all the dead children and cite them for his toughness if he needs that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing I would say about what he said yesterday is that it's a good thing to hold him to about his eloquence about what's wrong with the damn place that he's responsible for keeping open. It really is. You know, it was a brilliant speech in the sense of articulating what was wrong with the place, and he said it. So, you know, he's going to have to be, those words are going to have to come back to haunt him. He has articulated an understanding of what is wrong, what is fundamentally wrong with Guantanamo, which, you know, he needs to beat the Republicans with that. If they don't understand it, if they want to stand up and say, hey, you know, these Muslims are lucky that we're just holding them in indefinite detention and that we're not just taking them all out, you know, because we know that that's what some of these people think. You know, the bottom line of the war on terror, you know, the horrible truth about what happened after 9/11, and this is what some of the men in Guantanamo are still suffering from, is that the Bush administration intended to round up any Muslim that it regarded as a potential threat, not even an actual threat, but a potential threat, or someone who might have a little bit of information about something that would help them to build up a bigger picture of who the enemies were. You know, they really seriously would have rounded up and held indefinitely millions and millions and millions of people if they could. We know that they held at least 80,000. Across the various theaters of the war on terror. You know, and most of those men eventually got released. But, you know, that is the scale of the craziness that was going on. And that's the scale of the craziness that is still present in some of the people who are elected representatives of the people of the United States, who, you know, whose grasp on justice and fairness and a sense of proportion and not doing things that are flagrantly counterproductive, you know, their grip on that is non-existent.
All right, now, can you give us some anecdotes, some of the stories that are coming out of there about how people are suffering and sort of, you know, take this from imaginary and theoretical to some real human stories here so that people can, you know, maybe identify these men as human beings deserving some mercy?
You know, I mean, I think that when we manage to hear the words of, I mean, someone like Shaka Armour, who, you know, who is desperate to be reunited with his family after 11 years and says, you know, I just want to be with them. I mean, I will, you know, what do they want me to do to leave this place? You know, do they want to tag me? Do they want to not let me have a passport ever in my life? You know, whatever they want, they can do. Just please let me out of here. And, you know, he's spoken very eloquently about that. And that was, you know, most recently in the op-ed that he had in the Observer newspaper here in Britain, run by The Guardian. But, you know, he's eloquent and an English speaker. So, again, it's, you know, one of the most direct ways that we get the story. And we haven't heard as much from a lot of the men in Guantanamo about the ways they're suffering. But it's the same thing. You know, there are so many fathers in Guantanamo who have children that are, you know, that they've never seen, or have children who the last time they saw them were babies, who are now teenagers. We have so many people in Guantanamo whose mothers, whose fathers, whose relatives have died while they've been there, who haven't, and they've never seen them. You know, and we have these people who can be so eloquent and, you know, and as we see, so frequently are eloquent when they're given the opportunity to bypass the whole censorship nonsense and speak to the world. And yet these are people who in some cases are now so thin that, you know, one of the lawyers for Fayez al-Kandari, one of the Kuwaitis in there, whose story I've written about a lot over the years, a very principled humanitarian who, you know, has also been regarded as a troublemaker in Guantanamo because they couldn't break him. They couldn't get him to tell lies about people. And he's been locked up in solitary for much of the time because they regard him as a threat, because he's eloquent and persuasive and they couldn't destroy him. But, you know, one of the lawyers for him went to him recently and said, you know, he's so thin you can put both your arms around his middle and your hands will touch. You can put your hands around him, around his stomach, and your hands will touch. That's how thin he is. That's, you know, so like a 6-year-old child?
Right, and then to prevent them from dying, it's tie them down and shove a rubber tube up their nose and down their gut, which is, I'm sure, you know, I remember from years back, this was very specifically described as an incredibly brutal procedure. It's not like these are doctors hired by the prisoners who care about them and need their repeat business or anything. They just jam that hose up their nose and go ahead and make it a sort of a way to get around the bans on torture. Like, oh, I get to beat you up somehow, you know, I'll beat you up with this hose up your nose.
I think, you know, there's a guy who's been in a hunger strike since the summer of 2005, and they brought the first restraint chairs in January 2006 to make it inconvenient, the commander of Guantanamo said at the time, for these men to be in a hunger strike. And he has been twice a day having this thing shoved up his nose and into his stomach and force-fed since January 2006. You know, that's horrific, over 7 years. He's still alive, so I think we can say that they're very good at force-feeding people and keeping them, stopping them from dying. You know, what the authorities are no good at doing is providing people with any reason to want to live. That's what is really happening now with this hunger strike. And that's the bit that isn't going to go away. That's the bit that people really need to focus on more than the stories of the horrendous force-feeding, which I understand how awful it is. But the bigger political problem is the most pressing thing. Why are these men doing this? What is the despair that they feel? They have lost their reason to live. They are hopeless beyond belief. And that is the fault of the United States government. This is not some dark foreign power or some tyrant that we can portray easily as such and dismiss as somebody who has no humanity. This is the United States of America. This is President Barack Obama, who is depriving these people of their rights to an extent that, you know, frankly, you know, Dick Cheney would have approved of. When Bush and Cheney set up this place with Rumsfeld in the first place, the intention was to hold human beings with no rights. And I think the right not to be imprisoned indefinitely with no way of getting out of that situation is a right that these men need to be given back.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, Dick Cheney is very specifically on the record invoking this. Well, first of all, praising this policy, one of many policies of Obama's on national security that he approves of. And, of course, he also takes it as confirmation that he was right all along, because even Barack Obama has endorsed policy A, B, C, D, and E, including Guantanamo. And so that proves it. Yeah, see, once you get the power and you have to take responsibility, then you know you have to do the right thing and keep a communist, ridiculous kangaroo prison system down there in Cuba.
Sure.
You know? And so, yeah, it's not just that he would approve. He does approve, and he cites it as proof that he was right all along.
Yeah. And he's, you know, anything that will help help him evade the people who are calling for his prosecution.
And you know what? I got to tell you, obviously, I'm hell-bent in a lot of ways, but I was not raised by ideologues. My family or my neighborhood, my friends' parents when I was a little kid, anything like that. It was very run-of-the-mill kind of a situation, sort of a neighborhood. And yet still, I was raised understanding that, hey, if they can do it to this guy, then they can do it to you. And so the American principle is all, even if he's the worst guy in the whole wide world and everybody knows it, we still give him the fairest trial we possibly can so as to always preserve fair trials for ourselves in case we are falsely accused or accused based on a misinterpretation or whatever. Because after all, we've all seen Matlock. We all know that even the most well-meaning police and prosecutors sometimes make mistakes. And you know what I mean? This is very,
yeah,
very basic American sort of a thing. Like, you can't even have a red,
American,
white, and blue flag
stuff
without,
I mean,
acknowledging
it's, you know, it's
this.
Something that was exported from, you know, 13th century England. In Magna Carta, the principle of habeas corpus, that you can't be locked away indefinitely without charge or trial, without having had a judge, you know, be able to ascertain whether it's legitimate for you to be held or not. You know, that's the absolute, you know, linchpin of our ability not to be arbitrarily detained by you know, an executive, whether that's the king or the president of the United States. And, you know, and that's what these men have lost. Now, you know, practically they lost that through the decisions that were taken by conservative judges in the D.C. Circuit Court in Washington, D.C., who told the lower court judges after 2008, when they'd been impartially going through the government's evidence and regularly turning out and saying, this is a joke. How dare you put this case in front of me? You have no evidence that this man was part of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. You know, they couldn't stand that. So they told the lower court, you know, you've got to believe everything the government says unless the prisoner, you know, who has no access to anything, can refute what the government says. Outrageous political decision, you know, which stands, which the Supreme Court hasn't taken on, which for the Guantanamo prisoners and the Guantanamo prisoners alone, of the people held by the United States on you know, territory that is America, which, you know, Guantanamo is, effectively, that they are the only people for whom habeas corpus doesn't count. You do not get the right to have a judge decide whether you're entitled to be held. You know, they have been deprived of this fundamental right. You know, and not only did the judges do that, but President Obama and the Congress, either through their inaction or through their actions, have also reinforced this notion that habeas corpus is a quaint provision that may well apply to the rest of us, but under no circumstances applies to the men in Guantanamo, whether by accident or design. These men have no rights to say, excuse me, I told you many years ago that you got the wrong guy, or that you really think that I'm somebody that I'm not, but you're not allowing me to have that objectively looked at. You have told me I'm stuck here for the rest of my life, and there's nothing I can do about it. It's so awful, Scott. We've been talking about it for years. I mean, I'm enormously relieved that today I can say to you, the Colonel Maurice Davis, who was the chief prosecutor of the military commissions at Guantanamo, a conservative who resigned when he was placed in the chain of command under Jim Haines, the Pentagon's chief counsel, a man who advocated for the use of torture, mm-hmm. was one of the lawyers instrumental in constructing the Bush administration's torture program. He resigned when he was placed in the chain of command under Jim Haines. He's since become, you know, one of the great outspoken critics of Guantanamo. And yesterday, after President Obama delivered his speech, he set up a petition on change.org to close Guantanamo Bay, to tell President Obama to close Guantanamo Bay. And I'm very pleased to say, Scott, that in less than 24 hours, that petition has got 70,000 signatures.
Wow.
That's a huge, huge sea change, really, in the way that Guantanamo is being understood and perceived.
Well, now, listen.
You know, we've been talking about this for years.
And as far as petitions go, Andy, you know,
people interested. Over the last few years, and suddenly we've got a movement of people who at least are prepared to click a button and say, you know, I really don't think this is right.
Right. Well, now, and you know, when as far as petitions go, if I had made this thing or if 100 other peace activists had made this thing, it wouldn't really matter so much. But this is the one. In fact, there probably already are petitions out there like this. But this is the one put up there by him, Colonel Davis.
Yeah.
And so that's what makes this the one that, you know, we could expect to get already, I'm sure, have a lot of professors, you know, important people and mucky mucks and establishment types signing on and that kind of thing. So,
well, I think it's also a sign, Scott, that, you know, behind the scenes as well, there are people, you know, who don't have an activist background or who are not, you know, known for their perpetual dissent against the state and the status quo. But there are, you know, there are proper professional people in all of these walks of life who are, you know, deeply talking to people within the administration, if they can get to them or trying to get to them, to say, look, you know, we really have to talk about this. We have to do more than talk about this. We have to act on this. This is an injustice that can't stand. And, you know, I mean, that's why President Obama spoke yesterday. He, you know, I'm sure that it could have been arranged that the guy who asked the question could have been told not to ask the question. You know, he set out the response, finally. I mean, God, you know, it took nearly 3 months that these guys have been trying to starve themselves to death. It took nearly 3 months for him to deign to give them a response. But, you know, he has, and that's indicative that pressure is coming at him from all directions. So not just from the international NGOs, not just from the usual human rights groups and the lawyers groups, but sustained attacks from from the liberal establishment, from the New York Times, from the Washington Post, which just published an editorial. The New York Times has had two very critical editorials now in the last few weeks. You know, the pressure is on, and the whole nonsense about Boston, which I have to say, looking at it from afar, showed how utterly beneath contempt most of what passes for TV news is in the United States. It didn't manage to persuade people that they would embark on a renewed witch hunt against all the Muslims, and, you know, and would be out on the streets demanding that Guantanamo was open forever, and getting Mitt Romney and saying, let's double it, let's triple it, let's, you know, let's go crazy on the Muslims again. It hasn't led to that. It's, you know, Guantanamo hasn't gone away. Guantanamo remains an issue that has reached, it seems to me it's reached the tipping point in terms of the people who are responsible for helping to shape decisions about the way people think about things. And I just, you know, I don't see where it goes from here except for President Obama to get out of his comfort zone and actually do something difficult.
Yeah, well, so much for that. All right, now, listen, one last question here. I know a hawk who says, you know what, they should have just done this the old-fashioned way and called anybody that they were calling Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or close enough, calling them prisoners of war. And you have the military commission decide whether they're guilty enough to continue, you know, quote-unquote guilty enough to continue to hold them until the end of the war or not. And then it's the same old process they developed over 230 years of having a so-called constitutional republic and all of that. And then you avoid all of this made up. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, right? Is the aftermath of David Addington and Jim Haynes' imagination being put into practice there September 11th. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that it should have happened. And I think that even at this point, it would be, theoretically possible to, you know, go through the cases of the guys who are held and say, actually, you know, there's a whole bunch of people here who are, we're going to hold as prisoners of war. But I would say, you know, the time is running out for that because time is running out for a mission accomplished flag to be flown that has some significance regarding Afghanistan. I don't mean to say that the United States is leaving Afghanistan, but there is going to be a point, I believe it's next year, when there will be a handover of forces. And remember, most of the prisoners in Afghanistan have now been handed over to the Afghan authorities. Most, not all. But there will come a point where it's no longer legitimate for the United States to claim that it is involved in an endless war. You know, these guys at Guantanamo were picked up during the actions mainly related to the initial invasion of Afghanistan and the, you know, the rather horrible blurring of borders that happened afterwards where the Bush administration thought it could pick people up anywhere. But they were mostly picked up in Afghanistan and Pakistan. They're connected with a conflict that honestly is long over. But seeing as the U.S. still has a major presence there, they could technically argue that they're still at war. What's going to happen next year is, I think, going to push them into an area where they can't actually say that anymore. And they're going to be put in that position where, you know, as used to happen at the end of conflicts, the other party in the conflict would then be released. You know, we've shifted the parameters to such an extent because of what Bush did that it's no longer possible for people to think, hey, that's what happens in war. You know, afterwards, everybody shakes hands and goes home. Well, you know, we've ended up in this crazy place where, you know, with Guantanamo, the hysteria that has been deliberately manufactured by cynical people who love the idea of holding people indefinitely without charge or trial is such that, you know, if you mention the word Muslim and terrorist, you start getting people quaking in their boots. If you mention the word Muslim, terrorist, and Guantanamo, you can get away with anything. That's how it's been for years.
Yeah.
You know, that's the combination of words that encourages supposedly intelligent people to glaze over and say, you can do what you want, because you're obviously protecting us from the kind of threat that I can't even imagine, even in my deepest, darkest nightmares. Whereas the truth at Guantanamo is that there are a small number of people, there have never been more than a few dozen at most, of people accused of any crimes that are significant in terms of international terrorism. And the rest has been encouraging people to glaze over and quake at the notion of what? At the notion of a bunch of people who may have spent a little bit of time in a training camp in Afghanistan and then were fighting with the Taliban in a civil war against the Northern Alliance, who were Muslims, as part of some idealized notion of an Islamic State, that all of this was happening, you know, 11, 12, 13 years ago. But these guys are is deemed to be acceptable that they can be deprived of their liberty forever? No, it's crazy, you know. But these words also were something that Obama said yesterday. So, you know, there was some careful scripting that went on about understanding some of the fundamental things that are wrong, and it's pushing him on those things. He said them there.
Yep. All right, listen, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate all the work you do and, of course, your time on the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, as always, Scott. You know, I mean, I'm glad to say I'm getting calls from all over the world now from people that have never spoken to me before, but, you know, I always remember who my friends are and the people who have been doggedly pursuing this story for many years, and, you know, you're up there with the best of them, man.
Well, listen, I mean, you are the single leading source for information on the situation at Guantanamo Bay in the world. I mean, Carol Rosenberg is right up there with you, of course, from McClatchy Newspapers, and there are a few others, but, I mean, you know, the importance of what you do can't be overstated. So that's enough of telling you how much I like you. Bye. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
AndyWorthington.co.uk and also FFF.org. This one is called The Prisoners Speak, Reports from the Hunger Strike in Guantanamo. Check out his book, The Guantanamo Files, and his movie, Outside the Law.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, Scott@ScottHorton.org. And thanks. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by former hedge fund manager Mike Swanson, who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Wall Street Window is unique in that Mike shows people what he's really investing in and updates you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike thinks his positions are going to go up because of all the money the Federal Reserve is printing to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. And Mike's got a great new book coming out, so also keep your eye on writermichaelswanson.com for more details. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. CNI stands against America's negative role in the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the war party's relentless push to bomb Iran, and the roles played by twisted Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia in justifying it all. The Council for the National Interest works tirelessly to expose and oppose our government's most destructive policies, but they can't do it without you. Support CNI's push to straighten out America's crooked course. Check out the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org. Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up, turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner.
Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down, it's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.